For the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, this is a review of John Suchet's The Last Waltz. Each episode is enriched by beautiful music selected by Gerald Fennec. The script is mine, Patricia Salomone. In this review of the book The Last Waltz by John Suchet, I have now reached chapter 16. The subtitle of the book is The Strauss Dynasty and Vienna, and very aptly, in this chapter, rather than concentrate solely on the history of the Strauss family, Suchet takes a wider look at historical events of the time. In particular, he deals with the private life of Emperor Franz Josef, who, in 1848, at the age of 18, had been placed on the Habsburg throne. The young man had been expected soon to relinquish this throne. Instead, his was to be a very long reign, spanning the second half of the 19th century, and fraught with tragedy. In 1853, while he strolled along the Bastei in the company of a close friend, one of his officers, simply mingling with the Viennese strollers, the young emperor survived an assassination attempt. Suchet tells us the high, sturdy collar of his military uniform had saved his life. Suchet then embarks on telling the fascinating story of the emperor's private life. Besotted by his first cousin Elizabeth, Duchess of Bavaria, whom he married in 1853, the emperor was to have a long and troubled life, starting with a very unhappy married life. Beautiful Elizabeth, known as Sissy, hated the formality and protocol of the imperial court. She did not get on with her domineering mother-in-law, who in fact was her aunt, and she longed for the freedom of her childhood home in Bavaria, at Possenhofen Castle on Lake Starnberg. Unlike most women of her times, she had a mind of her own. She indulged in horse riding. In her obsession with preserving her slim body and her beauty, she had a gym set up in her private rooms and starved herself for days on end in order to maintain her wasp-thin waist, which she emphasized by having her ladies-in-waiting tie her into impossibly small-waisted dresses. In Suchet's words, her behavior at court bordered on the eccentric. Besides, probably due to inbreeding, her mental health was, to say the least, fragile. She suffered bouts of depression, and the refusal by her mother-in-law to allow her to care for her children, her firstborn died at the age of 2, increased her melancholy and sadness. By contrast, her handsome husband was a soldier trained to rules of discipline, obedience, duty. He adored his wife and indulged her in all her whims. When she developed a passion for Greece, he had a house built for her in Corfu, which in the end she hardly used. When she wanted to go to Britain for the fox hunt, he ignored rumors that she was having an affair with the dashing Scottish horseman, Bay Middleton. Actually, the last waltz does not deal with Empress Elizabeth's political tendencies, but it is a known fact that she sympathized with the Hungarian rebels who sought secession from Austria. Much to her husband's dismay and to her mother-in-law's pique, she failed to attract the love of her Austrian subjects, while she was very popular in Hungary. John Suchet tells us that, unattached as she was to her husband, Sissy had the intelligence of turning a blind eye, in fact of encouraging his eventual attachment to the young actress Katharina Schratt. It was by no means unheard of for a ruler to take a mistress, and as long as the young woman could be persuaded to exercise at least a modicum of discretion, there would be benefit all round. So the Empress made sure the Emperor would meet the young actress and put no obstacles to what became a relationship that was to last until the end of the Emperor's life in 1916. For over 30 years, Katharina was to console and support the Emperor through the dramatic events of his long life. What can be more dramatic than the death of one's only son, in this case the son destined to inherit the crown of Emperor of Austria, Apostolic King of Hungary, and an endless list of other titles? August 1858, a 101-gun salute had heralded the birth of Austria's crown prince, Archduke Rudolf. The emperor was ecstatic. To him, the birth of a son meant the continuity of the imperial line. It also meant that the empress might regain their subjects' affection. Franz Josef also hoped the new babe would bring joy to his wife. But he was unable to stop his mother from taking control once more and separating the young mother from her son, so that as the infant grew, Elizabeth was allowed to have no say over his upbringing or education. By the time Sissy was 22, she was suffering from such extreme physical exhaustion that tuberculosis was feared. She stayed away from court life, but whenever in Vienna, her health deteriorated. Today, we might say she suffered from anorexia. Our author says hers was a psychosomatic disease. As a result of his upbringing, Archduke Rudolf, the Crown Prince, rarely saw his mother, and his relationship with his imperial father was stiff and formal. By the time he was a young man, he was, in Suchet's words, a disillusioned, even dangerous young man, who mixed with the poor and anarchists. He wrote in favor of social democracy and made no secret of his activities and allegiances. He behaved like anything but a future emperor ruling by divine right. His behavior was, in fact, seditious. When Franz Josef decided his son was to marry and settle down and have a family, the chosen bride was Stephanie of Belgium, a 15-year-old princess, seemingly a perfect match, her mother being a Habsburg princess. Rudolf was in his early 20s. The couple were virtual strangers. A photograph of the young couple on page 175 is commented by our author with the following caption: Crown Prince Rudolf and his wife Princess Stephanie, their physical apartness compounding an obvious lack of affection. A few years into the marriage, Rudolf was addicted to morphine, and he was a heavy drinker. In the year 1888, while preparations were being made for the celebration of the 40th anniversary of Franz Josef's accession to the throne, his son published a 15,000-word open hostile letter to His Majesty Emperor Franz Josef, under a pen name which barely disguised his true identity. Rudolf's mind was so unbalanced that he began to toy with the idea of suicide. But he had odd plans for that also. He tried to entice a young dancer, Mitzi Kaspar, to join him at a monument dedicated to Emperor and Fatherland, in front of which they should shoot themselves. The young woman wisely refused. At this point in time, Rudolf met Mary Vetsera, who John Suchet describes as an ambitious 17-year-old daughter of an ambitious mother, who had no qualms in becoming the Archduke's mistress, and even hoped one day to replace his unloved wife. Mary belonged to the new aristocracy, her father having been ennobled by Franz Josef himself. All this is happening in the year of the Emperor's 40th anniversary as a ruler. A huge monument is being unveiled to Empress Maria Theresia, mother of the nation. Personalities of world fame are visiting Vienna, among them the Prince of Wales, the King of Greece, the Kaiser of Germany, all paying homage to the Emperor and his beautiful Empress Elizabeth. Rudolf looks ill and despondent. One thought occupies his mind.
Theresa was the only female Habsburg to have ruled and reigned over her family lands. It must be made clear that it is a mistake to refer to her as Empress of Austria. In the latter land, she was Archduchess. She was styled Empress only when her husband, whom she married as dispossessed Duke of Lorraine in 1736, and who became Grand Duke of Tuscany a year later, was elected Holy Roman Emperor in 1745. In no way could her dominions be termed a nation because of their very nature. She was Queen of Hungary, Bohemia and Slavonia, Duchess of Milan, ruler of what are now Belgium and Luxembourg, and so on. Maria Theresa's image as mother was strengthened by the fact that she had a large family of 11 daughters and 5 sons, of whom a total of 13 survived infancy. But a further 2 did not survive adolescence. She was an absolute ruler over her lands, in which there were as many diverse nationalities as she had children. Immediately upon her accession, after her father, Emperor Karl VI, died in 1740, she was attacked on several fronts by her enemies. She had to defend her lands and family interests during the War of Austrian Succession, which ended in her loss of Silesia in 1748. Unfortunately, her second attempt to reconquer Silesia led to the Seven Years' War, which started in 1756. She lost again and had to devote herself to initiating a number of important reforms which were of benefit to her subjects. She chose to use her absolute power in such a way that she should be termed as a precursor of the enlightened despotism as embarked upon by her more radical eldest son, Joseph II, who after his father's death in 1765 was elected Holy Roman Emperor and became co-ruler with his mother in the Habsburg lands. He had to wait until his mother's death before he could really do as he pleased, and that was after 1780. Among the most important reforms Maria Theresa initiated were those in the education sector, the aim of which was to provide education to all children. She introduced a uniform system of weights and measures in all her lands. This facilitated trade and commerce, and she also encouraged industry. She embarked upon several public works like the building of the Burgtheater in Vienna, paved the city's streets, and enlarged Schönbrunn Palace. She also tried to control and eradicate immorality, an attempt which was difficult to achieve, despite the harsh penalties which were enacted. On the debit side, she persecuted Jews and Protestants, believing this was for the sake of uniformity and order in her lands. She was also fortunate in having the devoted allegiance and, in most ways, the wise service of her chancellor, Prince Kaunitz, who was still in office when she died. As could be seen in the way she dealt with her own children, who, as was customary, were treated as pawns on the European diplomatic chessboard, she was a strict authoritarian, but always believed that what she did was for the good of her people.
On Monday, 28th January 1899, Crown Prince Rudolf takes a 15-mile journey to Meierling. Separately, Mary Vetsera also leaves for Meierling. Close friends of the Crown Prince are there too, as also are the court chamberlain and a valet. During the day, the men went hunting, and in the evening there was a hearty meal before the lovers retired to the Crown Prince's bedroom, with orders to be woken at 7:30 the following morning. What happened is history. Rudolf shot the woman dead on the bed, and after several hours, turned the gun on himself. Suchet writes, "In a single night, the history of the Habsburg Empire had changed." How was the court to announce this horrible tragedy? Mary's corpse had to be removed and secretly buried, while it was decided to announce a half-truth. The prince had committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. He had, the court announced, been alone at the time. The Pope was induced to believe that Rudolf's had not been a normal suicide, but that it had been induced by a state of mental derangement. He therefore granted a Roman Catholic burial, and the prince was laid to rest in the Augustinerkirche in the center of Vienna, where years later he was joined by both his parents, closer in death than they had ever been in life. his younger sister Marie Valerie, who accompanied her mother when they visited the corpse lying in state, wrote, "He was so handsome, and he lay there so peacefully, the white sheet pulled up to his chest, and flowers strewn all around. The narrow bandage on his head did not disfigure him. His cheeks and ears were still rosy, with the healthy glow of youth. The restless, often bitter, scornful expression that was often characteristic of him in life had given way to a perfect smile. He never seemed so beautiful to me before. He seemed to be asleep and calm and happy." His death was to have dire consequences on the Habsburg dynasty, and we shall see later in this story. Next week, we will go back to seeing how Johann Strauss's life and musical compositions intermingled with that of his emperor, Franz Joseph, to come down in history. I hope you will join me for the next episode, and I thank Gerald Fennec, Albert Storace, and the team at Campus FM for their assistance.